Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free.
From Wondery.
How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing pretty darn good, Justin. How are you feeling?
I'm okay. We've added some social media accounts. We're hanging out with the millennials now, right?
What do you mean hanging out with? Well, they have to find us, I think, but we have started a TikTok account. And to be honest, it was something I was never into. This really came about because I had talked with Sarah Turney quite a bit at CrimeCon, and she was telling me how great it's been for her and her sister's case. You could say she talked us into it. So if you want to find us on TikTok, look for at Gen Y Pod.
Yeah, I've been out there for a little bit. I think it's pretty fun. So tonight's case, Aaron, a couple is trying to sell their boat online, and it's said that they meet up with some buyers, and then something terrible happens. The wife is found bloodied, beaten, and her husband is nowhere to be found. So with that, what are we talking about tonight?
We're talking about a case from February 6, 2009, Corbett, Oregon. This is the case of Jerry and Lynn Stomps.
I think we should just start with who these people were and build up to this day, because they're an older couple that's been together for a really long time. And this seems to be a really heart-wrenching tragedy that they're just trying to sell a boat and their lives would be destroyed the way it was.
Gerald Stomps, also known as Jerry, was 60 years old at the time. He was a Vietnam veteran, honorably discharged in 1973, and during his service had received the Vietnam Service Medal, which was a Vietnam campaign medal. He married Hazelyn Plant in September of 1970, and it's after they got married that they moved to Corbett, Oregon. Jerry had worked in a Safeway warehouse for 20 years before he became a rental property owner and manager, a landscaper, and a Christmas tree farmer. They owned a 17-acre Christmas tree farm. And it was said that their kids were always outside playing. Jerry was also an avid outdoorsman, hunter, fisherman, and a member of Corbett Community Church. Jerry and Lynn had two children, Jason was born in 1973 and Adam in 1976 and had four grandchildren. Now, this couple actually got an inheritance in 1991 when Lynn's father died and left her $1.7 million. Now, they used this money to invest in rental properties around Portland. They also thought, well, now we can really enjoy ourselves in our retirement. Now, even though they just got all this money in 1991, Jerry was very much a saver. He didn't like credit cards. So if he was going to buy something, he paid for it in cash. And that meant whether it was a boat or a car or whatever.
That's a man after my heart. I hate credit and loans.
But they almost force you to do that, don't they, Justin?
Yeah, in today's world and the buying market, it's almost impossible to buy anything with cash anymore.
I mean, you can do it. It's just you almost don't get credit for it. So by the late 90s, this couple, they were on their own again because their boys had grown up and started their own families. And in 2004, they became grandparents. So this is a couple that seemed to have everything going for them. They had stability. They had children and grandchildren. I mean, why are we covering their case, right?
It sounds like the perfect couple, happily ever after. But we know until it isn't. Now, this goes down February 6, 2009. Gerald Fort and Jim Pogue were heading into town when they saw something moving across the Gordon Creek Bridge. And they're kind of looking down the embankments, and Gerald saw like a hand rise up. And he thought maybe a fisherman had been out casting a line, fell out of his boat. He wasn't sure. So they stopped, and Jim jumped out and went down to see what was going on. He told Gerald that there was a woman down there, and he needed help pulling her up the embankment. And Gerald was looking at her condition, which was not good, screaming in pain and covered in blood. He said, maybe we should leave her there, call 911 and get the EMTs out to move her because I don't want to injure her further. They asked her her name and she said, Lynn Stomps. When the first responders arrived, she told them that she had been a victim. She said they were meeting up with two men to sell a boat when they were attacked. She said that Jerry had met them online and wanted to meet them in person before bringing them to see the boat. She's trying to give names and descriptions, but she's in so much pain that it isn't really clear. So they go ahead and transport her to the Legacy Emmanuel Hospital in Portland. Now, the police officers believe that there are two killers on the loose. So they do air support, they release the dogs, they call in backup, and they have a full-on citizen search for Jerry.
Yeah, they're expecting to find his body because he wasn't there and they didn't hear or see anything. So they figured these two men must have killed Jerry Stomps. You know, you said Lynn was injured. What did they find when they checked out her condition at the hospital?
She had scratches all over her. Her fingernails had been bloodied up from scratching at the embankment, and she had a broken pelvis. That's serious. So she's not able to move on her own. They're having to help her get around. And I would assume that somebody was probably stomping on her and that's how she broke it.
Or maybe she was thrown off the bridge for all we know.
Yeah.
Now at the hospital, she was questioned about this. She gave as much information as she could. She said after they got up, Jerry told her that he had an appointment with the guy that they were going to meet. And he was very interested in selling this boat, but Lynn didn't want anyone going to their house. So they left the house around 6:20, 6:30 in the morning, and they left their boat at home because they wanted to make sure that this was the real deal.
I've bought stuff on Craigslist and people are flaky and you don't want to get your boat out of a dock or out of a dry dock and then do all this stuff if they're not serious. So yeah, that makes sense to me.
And you also don't want anyone to just have your address when they might not show up, but they might show up later. So she didn't really know who this person was, the primary person they were supposed to try and sell the boat to, but she knew this person as Dave. And she said when they arrived to meet with Dave, Jerry took off with him towards the river and disappeared. Lynn was waiting in the truck, and she thought to herself, oh, I'll go. So she started to get out of the truck, and when she did that, she heard Jerry yelling for her, basically saying, Lynn, run. Run, Lynn, run. So you can imagine the panic that set in. So she turned around, but there was someone right behind her who had a gun. So she ran down the road, and as she was running, she looked back, and she realized that this man who was pursuing her was going to get to her, and he grabbed the bag on her back, which spun her around, and then she says he tossed her over the bridge. So she went over the bridge into the water and regained consciousness later, and that's when she tried crawling up the embankment, but of course, you know, that injured her fingernails and her fingers. And she said it was about 30 minutes before someone finally spotted her, which are the two gentlemen you spoke about before. She did have a description of these men. She said both were white males. She said Dave was about 5'8" with brown hair, and that the other guy was 6 foot tall with brown hair, and that they had been driving a gold-colored pickup truck. So in comes the sketch artist.
She also assumed that they did the same thing to Jerry, her husband, and threw him off the bridge.
They did ask her, why do you think you were attacked? Why do you think your husband was attacked? And she said she didn't know because she said, we're not into alcohol, we're not into drugs, anything like that. We're just basic, normal people. And they said, well, do either of you owe any money to anyone? And she said, no. So the police, the detectives, they have to start coming up with theories. Obviously, at the top of the list is robbery. They were expecting to maybe buy a boat, but maybe they were expecting to take the boat.
Yeah. And they ask if they can search her property because they're assuming that maybe Dave and his buddy went onto the house and ransacked the place, stole stuff. You know, they're not sure. So she gives them permission to go investigate her house and search the property.
The other thing the detectives found when they were talking with people is that Jerry was kind of known as a, maybe not an anti-government guy, but heading in that direction where he didn't really trust the government and he didn't really trust banks. So maybe whoever was intending to rob him knew this and expected to be able to find a bunch of money. Now, these tracking dogs were released, like you said, but they didn't really come up with anything. When they were being led around in the areas where Lynn said that Jerry and Dave were, the dogs weren't picking up anything.
Detectives were able to gather video footage of Jerry's truck. It was seen at a Shell station right over the Washington border. And when the truck pulls into view, Lynn gets out of the truck. So she's seen driving the truck on the day that she said Jerry was in Klickitat County. Now, being that this had gone down on that day, the police start to question her about this. They say, hey, you know, you said that no one had seen Jerry since Friday before the Super Bowl happened. And she told them that he was with the kids on Sunday. And they told her, well, that's not true, because they'd already checked with other family members and the grandkids. So when they confronted her with the fact that there's surveillance video, Lynn said, did you find me on video? So it's this, what's up with your story? Your dates aren't lining up here.
If you think about it, the tracking dogs didn't pick up anything where she said they should have, right? That's where the activity was. And now she's lying about her story of Jerry driving to Klickitat County in his truck when they have her on video getting out of that truck on the day she said he had driven away. So this is something that a good detective, which in this case, these are good detectives, they're thinking, you're not telling us the truth, but why?
They're picking up on this immediately. I mean, this is just 4 days after the attack and the disappearance. And Lynn's response is just acting dumbfounded by it all.
But if you recall, she was injured. She had a broken pelvis. It was split in half and her hands were all bloody. So it appeared as though she was the victim of a crime. But with her story not really checking out, it's not taking the police much to turn around and look at her as a suspect now. Now, it's said that she remained calm throughout the interview, but at the end of the interview, detectives reached a conclusion, Justin.
I don't know if they put a handcuff on her wrist to the gurney or the bed or not, but they place her under arrest right there at the hospital.
And that's when she cracks. She just starts crying. Now that they've gotten that out of the way, they continue to speak with her and they want her to fill in more details. So she starts telling them that about a week before this went down, her husband Jerry had gone to Klickitat County, Washington, because they had property there, and he was there to feed cows and decided to spend the night there, and that he came back on the Thursday before noon, which is the following day. So detectives want to drive out to Klickitat County to talk with people and check the property out.
Apparently, Jerry's fairly well known. He has a lot of friends and he's part of the community. So they're going to ask around to see if anyone had seen Jerry up and around there the last few weeks. And nobody remembers talking with him or interacting with him at all. Now, that doesn't mean he wasn't there, but this is just one more check mark in this box of, is her story really adding up?
Detectives want to know why Lynn would have done this if she was guilty of it. So one of the things they speak to her about is, are you or Jerry involved in another relationship? And she said, no, we are Christians. And no, he wouldn't. This is my husband. And of course, one of the detectives responded quickly with, yeah, Christians have love triangles too. But Lynn says something interesting after this, which is, I told him the only way he was getting out of this, oh, I shouldn't say this, getting out of this marriage was through death, his or mine.
Till death do us part.
Well, it's one thing to say that when two people are happy and clinking champagne glasses, and it's another to say it after your husband has gone missing.
Bad timing.
But there's something else that happens that I think is crucial to this case, Justin, and it happens at the house.
Oh, yeah.
When they're at the house, they can't find any signs of forced entry, which is not surprising because let's just say Dave went back with Jerry to the house. Well, you know, if someone has a gun on you, you probably are going to open up your house.
There's no sign of forced entry and there's no sign that anything's been stolen.
But the crucial moment happens when they're looking around inside the house, and just inside the front door is a coat rack, and hanging from that coat rack is a fanny pack.
It looks out of place and there even could be some drops of blood on it. So they decide, let's look inside this fanny pack. They find a revolver.
Now, the couple's son, Adam, was questioned. Do you know anything about this fanny pack? Do you know anything about this gun? And he said, my dad carried that gun everywhere he went, even to church. So the police, of course, are interested because Jerry recently, supposedly, met with a couple of strangers. What better time to carry a firearm than that time?
Yeah. And why would the firearm be at the house? If these strangers had overpowered Jerry, gotten his gun away from him, and used it on him, they would have kept the gun or they would have threw it in a pond or something. It shouldn't be in the house.
It should have been on Jerry. Let's be honest.
They also noticed that two bullets had been fired. This is obviously getting the police interested in the house and the property. So they start running the dogs around in the yard. And there appears to be, I guess, a freshly dug grave. And then it's been covered back up with dirt. The dogs walk over it. They don't indicate anything on that. But it's a little weird. Now, given this is sort of a farm area, so, you know, maybe you are digging some stuff up and then covered it back up. But then the dogs go around the side of the house to the burn pit. What happens there?
They find bone fragments. Now, first they think, well, this could just be an animal.
Yeah.
But they're looking at these bone fragments, and I don't think they're thinking that they're animal.
They're a little too big for that. And they're going to put that one in their back pocket and have those tested because they have a reasonable suspicion that they have now found Jerry.
They're also trying to corroborate other aspects of Lynn's story. And one of the things that they find that really troubles them is they look at the phone records. And one of the things that Lynn had been adamant about was that Dave had called Jerry. They had been setting this up.
Yeah.
They couldn't find anything to corroborate that story.
Yeah. You're meeting up with somebody to sell a boat. You're going to have incoming calls, outgoing calls. You're going to have some type of communication with this Dave guy. There's nothing. Jerry wasn't communicating with anyone that was outside of his normal family and friends.
So they dig deeper, Justin. These detectives are really getting to it. And another find is that Lynn had lent their son, Jason, several thousand dollars. Now, we already said Jerry didn't like loans. He didn't like credit. Everything was cash. And so this would have been something he would not have known about.
Yeah, I get it. It's the son, and you know, you can give them money and expect it to be paid back, but it is out of sorts. So obviously Jerry had not known about it.
Digging deeper into the finances, they discovered that Lynn had $54,000 in debt, unsecured, unreported credit that obviously she had been keeping secret from Jerry. So now we start to get a sense of what was the motive. If she was responsible for Jerry's disappearance, assumed murder, it could have been this.
At the same time, when they're at the property, they speak with a neighbor, Richard Swanson. He was actually a renter on the property. And he says that he saw smoke coming from the burn pit, which this means the fire was set recently. And Richard's not far away, so he would notice something like that.
Right. And this is something that Lynn had disputed. She said, I didn't burn anything. But all we know is once again, she has said something that isn't true. And detectives, I think they've lost interest in Dave at this point.
They're not looking for any assailants anymore. Between her lies and the time frame, and now they're testing those bone fragments. They have to do an analysis on the mitochondrial DNA, which is ancestral DNA. And they get one of Jerry's toothbrushes. They get the DNA off that. They get the blood off the revolver. That matches Jerry. They have his bones. It's all coming back as Jerry.
Yeah, and some of that took some time. But even by February 12th, the lab was able to tell detectives that those bone fragments were definitely human. So, of course, doing DNA, that kind of stuff, it's not in 20 minutes like it is on the shows on TV.
Oh, yeah.
It really did seem like they were moving forward at a pretty good pace. So on February 13th, Justin, Lynn Stomps is arrested on the suspicion of murder.
Just 7 days later. And she's still at the hospital because a broken pelvis is pretty serious. So she's not going anywhere.
February 17th, Lynn Stomps pled not guilty to the murder charges. Now, prosecutors are moving forward because they said that sometime between January 30th and February 6th, Lynn killed her husband, then dismembered his corpse and burned it. So at this point, it's just the prosecutors have to go to court and convince it that Lynn needs to remain under arrest in custody until trial.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. Along with premium fabrics and finishes, how can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY.
Now they're doing hearings, and something happens on June 10th that kind of sets this trial back a little bit. That neighbor, that renter, Richard Swanson, he ended up shooting himself, taking his own life. He was going to be a witness. He was there that day. So this is a little fishy, not suggesting that anyone killed him. I think he really did take his own life, but this is a little odd, isn't it, Aaron?
It is. And I know that there are people out there who will say he was a witness against her and now he's dead by a gunshot wound, just like Jerry Stomps is probably dead from a gunshot wound. So it's very suspicious if you just maybe type out a sentence. But when you really examine it, detectives were very aware of who Richard Swanson was. And there's a long history of depression with him and a previous suicide attempt. And in Richard Swanson's case, all we can say is sympathy to his family. This was definitely a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
I just want to add to that. I don't think he would have cooperated with investigators if he was in cahoots with Lynn. I don't think he was in on this at all, because why would he say anything when questioned?
And just to be clear, it wasn't like if he was silenced, the case against Lynn Stomps would fall apart.
Now, it's January 26th, 2010. This trial is getting underway. And as most of you know, before a trial starts, you have that legal melee of what evidence is admissible. Obviously, the defense is trying to get everything suppressed. They're saying that Lynn was under duress at the hospital. She was on drugs, so she could not have given investigators consent to go search her property. And they have an argument. I get it. The prosecutor points out that the doctor said that her medications had worn off and she was totally coherent at the time of the interviews. And I think the judge does a compromise here. He allows all of the evidence at the house, the bones, the gun, the blood, all of that. But he suppresses any statements she made at the hospital. I think that's fair. What do you think?
Yeah, I know it's fair. And Judge Richard Baldwin did a good job because he even said drugs or not. When the police were speaking with Lynn, they didn't suspect her of anything. They were just trying to find Jerry. And so when they said, will you let us search your property? It's not like they were trying to trick her. It was literally, we need to search your property to see if we can find any clues about what happened to your husband, where he might be. Or if maybe the people who were responsible for this had gone back to that house. I mean, after all, Lynn was out by the bridge.
But Lynn had asked the officers to leave a few times when they confronted her about the inconsistencies in her story. So I think that's why the judge said maybe her statements are not admissible, but her giving them consent to search the property absolutely was. And so there we have it. Now this trial starts on January 11th, and they just start going through the timeline. Start bringing their witnesses on the stand. The district attorney, Kirsten Snowden, her opening statement was, she almost got away with it. Almost. But at the very last minute, something went horribly wrong. It was a catastrophic oversight. She hadn't planned on it, and it changed everything. What was she referring to?
Well, this refers to the two gentlemen who discovered her down by the bridge, you know, below the bridge. This changed everything because, well, she, according to the prosecutor, was hoping to get out of there after she had injured herself. You know, she didn't have any time to do anything else. She was literally, you know, like when you plan a crime, you have a timeline, and her timeline got interrupted early. That's essentially what the prosecutor is saying.
Can we assume that she threw herself off this bridge and accidentally broke her pelvis? And that's why she couldn't get back to the house to clean up the bones and dispose of the gun. Is this what we're getting at?
It's quite possible, because you would think, you know, all she has to do is go over the bridge and into the water. You know, now she has proof that she was thrown from the bridge. But yes, when you injure yourself that way, it's going to slow everything down.
I would think that would be the last thing you would do, but I don't know.
Well, this is just it, though, is not everybody is good at planning. I mean, how many times have we brought up the phrase, the perfect murder? This is definitely, it's an imperfect murder. There are too many issues here.
They bring the investigators on to the stand, and they obviously go over all of the inconsistencies in her story. How Lynn told them that she and her husband met a man named Dave down by the Sandy River because he was interested in buying the boat, but neither Lynn or Jerry had any communication with this man, nor did they bring the boat. But that kind of gets explained by her saying they wanted to meet with him first. They talk about how Lynn told investigators that it's possible that she and her husband didn't meet Dave through a Craigslist ad, meaning met him in person. So that would explain away why there wasn't any internet correspondence with him.
That just doesn't sound right, though. I mean, how do you forget that detail? As soon as Lynn found out that they had pulled the phone records, then she had a different story. Yeah, I think we may have met him somewhere, and that's how we met him. We didn't find him online first. So again, every time something would happen that threatened Lynn's versions of events, she would come up with a different story to cover herself.
I know.
I think one of the most interesting things that happened at trial here was that the sons of this couple, Jason and Adam, they were on her side. They were very supportive of Lynn, their mother. But as soon as they knew about that gun being in the fanny pack next to the front door, that changed everything for them. She lost their support once that fanny pack, once that gun was found near the front door, because as Jason said, my dad took that gun to church. The moment they found that gun by the front door, we knew that something was terribly wrong. This is a real problem because, you know, we've seen in other cases where kids, where parents, what have you, they will stand by family members no matter what, simply because they've already lost someone. They don't want to lose another.
Yeah. Now, the prosecutor, she keeps picking apart Lynn's story. They talk about how Jerry didn't have his wallet on him on the day he was reported missing. I mean, if he's selling a boat, you think he would have his wallet on him and his gun. But, you know, they talk about how Lynn Stomps, she had no bruises on her. There was not a lot of scratches. It was just this one injury, really. They talk about the blood on Jerry's gun and how it belonged to Jerry. So the gun was more than likely used to murder him. And then it's on the property. They talk about his bone fragments being found on the property, including a metal trash can that prosecutors brought into the courtroom, placed in front of the jury box. Talk about dramatic. And they also brought up Lynn's debt, which was actually a surprise to everyone in the family because they had no idea. The prosecutor, Snowden, said everything that she told them about the attack and what happened that day is simply forensically and physically impossible. I don't disagree with her, Aaron. But the defense, you know, they're going to come back with their arguments, right?
Of course.
Now, Randall Vogt says The prosecution cannot prove its case because the evidence simply isn't there. He said the prosecutors can't say where Jerry was killed, what day he was killed on, who killed him, and why that person killed him. Prosecution won't be able to prove if he was shot, where he was shot, and the prosecution based its case solely on Lynn's behavior on the first week of February 2009. All the points he made might be somewhat valid, but I don't think the prosecution needs to prove if he was shot when there's blood on a gun. I don't think the prosecution needs to prove how he died when we know he's dead. And that's always a weird legal debate that happens in a courtroom. But yeah, but he keeps referencing Lynn's behavior right after this event. And he says that it was irrational. And he does concede that there were inconsistencies and unlikely events, but he said a guilty mind and a cover-up doesn't mean she murdered her husband of nearly 39 years. He suggests that Jerry could have died by accident or at the hands of somebody else. He says you have to arrive at the conclusion that the death of Mr. Stomps is simply a mystery.
Yeah. Good try. Good try. Because I'm not feeling it, Justin. You talk about, well, you know, we don't really know what happened. And just because she did a cover up doesn't mean she murdered her husband. Well, why would she cover anything up then? This isn't really good work here. Not my opinion. Maybe it's because he didn't have much to work with, but this doesn't feel like it's going to work. Not to me.
I mean, if he had an accident and died, she could cash in on life insurance policies. She would get way more of a payout that way. If he was murdered by somebody else, what benefit would she gain by trying to cover the murder up? I'm trying to wrap my head around the logic here, and it's not working. Of course, the defense is going to question what her motive would have been. And the prosecutors, well, they think it's over money. It's as simple as that. They believe that Jerry and Lynn got into an argument, possibly on Super Bowl Sunday, got out of hand, and Lynn knew where his gun was and confronted him, shot him twice at close range, and then went on to dismember and burn his body. They describe Lynn's trip to Gordon Creek on February 6th, 2009, as her going to place evidence to make it look like Jerry went fishing by himself, to draw attention to his truck as if he had gotten lost and maybe drowned on his fishing trip. And in the midst of her planting the evidence, she fell, which is how she broke her pelvis. And that's why she had to come up with this whole story of being attacked and thrown over a bridge.
That makes way more sense, doesn't it, Justin? Because, you know, this idea that she would have just thrown herself off the bridge to make it seem like she had been thrown over the bridge, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
And why put herself at risk? I mean, she's just trying to get rid of Jerry. And I do want to expand on this. This whole idea of her killing him over money is because of the immense debt that she had racked up. $56,000? He didn't like $100 in debt. That would have been an argument starter for sure.
The next day in court, January 12th, the prosecutor Snowden projected a picture of a happy, sweet-looking couple up onto the wall. And she said, "This is the Lynn and Jerry Stomps that everybody knew until they weren't happy." And then she goes on to explain the Lynn Stomps that no one else knew, the one with a massive amount of debt and a story riddled with inconsistencies. She showed the jury the composite sketch of Lynn's alleged attacker, which, let's just say, it was incomplete because she couldn't explain it very well. And she went on to explain how Lynn continued telling police that she and Jerry had been attacked and Jerry had been abducted, taken. Then how does his bones show up in a burn pit behind your house? It just doesn't add up at all. the prosecutor ends that statement with, if she hadn't injured herself, everything would have been very different. And she's right, because Lynn would have been able to get back home and dispose of all this evidence and continued the charade that her husband just left and never came back and was missing.
There was a detective, Jay Penthany, who gave testimony. According to this detective, Hazelyn Stomps shot her husband with his own gun and then dismembered him. These shots were fired in an execution style, so very close to the head, probably without Jerry even knowing it was going on.
The blood spatter on the gun indicated that it had been fired at close range, and being that there were two spent casings, we assume he was shot twice. The defense attorney can say they can't prove he was shot all they want, but when there's blood on the gun that belongs to the victim, I think that if it's wet outside, you can assume it was raining.
So then Lynn burned her husband's body and attempted to obscure the evidence. And they talk about how long this takes to do this stuff. I mean, a metal trash can was used so that the fire would get even hotter to incinerate all of the evidence. Less than 10% of Jerry's skeleton was found, so the fire destroyed much of Jerry's body. But of course, there's this idea that there was actually an original plan, which was, oh, my husband left to go fishing and he didn't return. But then when she was setting things up to look like he had been there fishing, she fell. But it also explains why she was seen in his truck. So all we have here, Justin, is we have a woman who, according to the prosecution, murdered her husband because her husband found out that she was really deep in debt, somewhere to the tune of $54,000 to $56,000. She was having to make payments every month, which was probably how he found out, because Jerry was very much in charge of the finances and was probably very interested in any kind of payments that were coming in or going out, especially going out. There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/GenY. That's storyworth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
The prosecution has delved into Jerry and Lynn's financial background, and on the last day, they bring in a lot of witnesses. The defense hadn't called any witnesses during the trial. They didn't counter a lot of the testimony. I don't think she had much of a defense. I don't know what kind of defense they could have brought either.
Well, I think the defense, and this is Vogt, her attorney, used the angle of, well, you can't really prove all of this stuff, so it's kind of a mystery. But the fact that his bones were found on the property and had been nearly incinerated indicated that Lynn did it. And according to the DA, this only happens if this was murder. I mean, you don't accidentally kill somebody and then burn up their body and try to hide it. So again, I think this is the defense attorney doing their best, but just not really have anything to work with.
I think it's a pretty clear-cut case. The jury deliberates for only 5 hours. They find Hazelyn Stomps guilty of murder. At the time, she sat silently in the courtroom. She didn't show any emotion. And the sentence is life imprisonment with the possibility of parole after 25 years. I think the jury did it right.
This is how the system should work, right? You have great detective work, great attorneys on the prosecution side. I mean, they nailed it.
I don't think you could have shown a better case to the jury than this. And Jerry's family, his sons, they're all at the trial and they're all sobbing because they miss their dad. I mean, I can't even imagine being put through something like that, knowing that your mother killed your father. Her sons gave impact statements at the trial, and Jason got up to speak, but he broke down and left the stand. But Adam, he got up and was very vocal, and he yelled at his mother, "You are a monster. You lied when everybody in the world knew you were lying. You have not once shown a shred of remorse." Yeah, she really hasn't. This was her plan. She isn't remorseful. She killed Jerry and she just botched the cover up.
That may be, but it's said that in court, people did see some emotion on her face during Adam's impact statement. But there's something else to this case, Justin, which is anytime you have a murder like this, the rest of the family feels it. They feel it in their grief. They feel it in the amount of work they have to do after the trial, after the sentencing. And in this case, they got the verdict they wanted. They got the sentence they wanted. But now Jason, who I guess you could say inherited money from his parents because of Jerry's death, well, it's not really worked out too well for him. Jason got about $190,000, but there are all kinds of payments that needed to happen. You're talking about attorney fees. He had to pay off his parents' debt, but they couldn't really make payments on those credit card bills because $60,000 immediately went to Lynn's first attorney. And even now, after they've paid a lot of things off, there are still debts that remain because of Lynn, and collection agencies continue to call Jason Stomps asking for payments. So you can imagine, he's lost his father. His mother is arrested, convicted, and put away for that murder. And now he's having to deal with even more stuff, all because of his mother. I can understand why he couldn't find any words that day when it was his turn to make his statement. That's a lot to process. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen ad-free. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.